and welcome to the Reader podcast. My name is Frances and I work for the Reader. On the 14th of September this year, Batsford Books will publish a handsome new anthology called A Poem to Read Aloud Every Day of the Year. This anthology has been compiled by Liz Eisen, who has volunteered or worked for the Reader for many years, running a variety of shared reading groups both in person and online. The Reader's Director of Literature, Katie Clark, spoke to Liz a few months ago about the genesis of this anthology, and they talked about the poetry included in the collection and compared the challenges, privileges and pleasures of shared reading and reading aloud.
Hello, my name is Katie Clark and I'm Director of Literature at The Reader. I'd like to introduce Liz Eisen, who is a long-time volunteer at The Reader and also editor of a new anthology, A Poem to Read Aloud for Every Day of the Year, which will be published by Batsford Books on the 14th of September. Welcome, Liz. It's great to have you here. And I wanted to start off by asking, how long have you been a Reader volunteer and how long have you run a shared reading group?
Hi, and it's great to be on the podcast. Well, I started leading shared reading groups around about 8 years ago, about 2015. And I started with a group in a community organisation called Open Age in Queen's Park in London. And since then, I've led quite a few different groups, including a lovely primary school group of year six students, which I loved. And when I became a volunteer manager and London manager for The Reader, I had the privilege of visiting lots of groups across London, care homes, libraries, sheltered accommodation. And, you know, kind of ran a lot of groups and watched a lot of groups and ran support sessions for volunteers. So I've just had a, you know, lovely experience over the last 8 years of shared reading.
Have you always been a keen reader yourself? Have you got any particular books or authors that have meant a lot to you personally over the years?
Once I got my glasses, age five, I did become a keen reader quite a long time ago. So kind of pre-JK Rowling, pre-Jacqueline Wilson. My staple diet was probably Enid Blyton, which, despite being quite out of fashion perhaps now, was something I really loved. It was so, the sort of formulaic quality of it was so reassuring, and the clear-cut moral code and so on. Given how much she wrote, I could still be reading my way through her books now, but luckily, fast forward a few decades, I think my tastes and interests have expanded a bit. Yeah, I wanted to say a story, if I may, about how I became an Elizabeth Gaskell fan, because it's a kind of reader story. I was looking after a group in Ladbroke Grove in London for a few weeks between a reader leader was leaving and another one was starting. And they were reading Mary Barton by Elizabeth Gaskell. You know, every week for months they'd been going. And I'd never read any Elizabeth Gaskell, never heard of Mary Barton. And I was just amazed by it and by the group doing it. And it was all about, you know, poverty in Manchester, about workers' rights, and not what I kind of expected from Mrs. Gaskell. And then I just, you know, had a big binge on her books after that. And so I think it's just an example of how actually my reading has been really influenced by my time with The Reader. And all sorts of different authors have come my way, not just poetry. But the other thing I wanted to mention was I'm having a bit of a Dickens spree at the moment. And I just finished Little Dorrit last week, which felt like a big achievement. And I came across at the end of it a lovely passage about reading aloud. So I wondered if I could, yeah, I've got the extract here, just a couple of lines. So it's Little Dorrit is reading to Arthur, who's just has been very seriously ill and is recovering. And this is what Dickens writes about her reading. Listening to the voice as it read to him, he heard in it all that great nature was doing. Heard in it all the soothing songs she sings to man. In the tones of voice that read to him, there were memories of an old feeling of such things and echoes of every merciful and loving whisper that had ever stolen to him in his life.
Wow.
Yeah, it is. It's a wow, isn't it? I mean, just you know, puts your finger on the sort of comforts of what it is, not so much to of the reading aloud, but of listening to someone reading to you. And it's all about the human voice, and I think he just captured it in those few lines.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that idea and the way it is described there. I think it's so often the case that kind of once we get past childhood, certainly we kind of don't have that experience. And even, you know, my oldest daughter is 11 now, and she's at that stage where she can read herself. And I think there is this expectation now that she will read and I won't read aloud to her, a bit of a shift there from, you know, even from my younger daughter, who's a few years younger. And still likes to be read aloud to, and just trying to carve out those moments where I do still read aloud to my older daughter. And what it does do, that kind of, it slows everything down a little bit as well, I think, and helps you take things in a way that you maybe don't do when you're reading at pace in your own head. And also, of course, that thing of hearing it in a different voice. It's tremendously exciting that you've published this beautiful anthology. I have got a sneak preview copy here in my hands, and it really is lovely. Can you tell us a bit about how it came about?
Well, I think it probably had its origins as a lockdown project. I realised that I'd been collecting poems, a bit like you might collect stamps or antiques or something, but for me it's poems. Always on the lookout for poems for the groups, for the shared reading groups. But in that, you know, period of lockdown and isolation, I kind of started reflecting on poems that meant a lot to me, not just ones that would necessarily work well in a group. And I guess I was kind of, I guess maybe it's like a personal anthology, which is a lifetime's work and still ongoing for me. But I would, you know, I definitely recommend it to anyone listening. It's so good to sort of just go for what you love and what you think might sustain you or nourish you, or has sustained and nourished you and might you can come back to and enjoy again. But anyway, I sort of became really fascinated with how writers describe and encode sound and silence in their writing, if that makes sense. So there's a line from The Tempest, Shakespeare's Tempest, which says, "The isle is full of noises, sounds and sweet airs that give delight and hurt not." And I think, you know, he's like a magician, isn't he? You kind of conjuring up the sound of that island through the language, through the words. I have a background in speech and language therapy, and so I think I've got this sort of love of exploring the relationship between spoken and written language. So these kind of things were going around in my head. There's another quote from a poem that's in the book by Eliel, talking about kind of the mystery of the spoken word itself. And it's she says, "Slight, impalpable, a word is but a breath of passing air." I mean, you just think that, you know, words are just breathing out, really. It's sort of magical. Anyway, post-pandemic, you know, I had some discussions with Batsford, the publisher, and they commissioned me to put this anthology together. So that's really how it came about.
I loved what you said there about kind of sound and silences, and the kind of the silences feeling important as well. And again, that feels something that I think in the shared reading groups, we kind of see that play out, and we talk about kind of the moments of silence feeling quite important, you know, and often as a reader leader in those moments, you can sometimes think, oh, people not enjoying it, I should maybe say something to cover up this silence. But actually having those moments to really digest and kind of think about the words and take them in, it feels like you do need both of those things together. And was also really struck, Liz, by what you said there when you were talking about this as a kind of personal anthology. And you said that you've kind of chosen things that sustain and nourish you, and the importance of that. I find that really, really fascinating. And how you kind of reach for those things at different points kind of through your life, and maybe go back to things. You know, it's not always a case of just finding new things, but returning to things that you've maybe read in the past, and sometimes reading them in a completely different way, but holding on to them in that sense. The anthology is specifically poems to read aloud, which of course is a really important part of a shared reading group. And lots of poems here have been read in shared reading groups over the years. So how did you go about choosing the poems that are included here and whittling it down, if you will?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the content is in a sense tried and tested group poems that I've read in groups or I've heard when I visited a group. Discovering shared reading and the reader has been life-changing for me, really. And I'd, you know, urge anyone listening, if they haven't already, to go and try out a shared reading group and see for yourselves how it's worked. But this kind of experience has given me a sense of what I think works particularly well aloud. Yeah, and what you were saying just now, actually, a lot of the poems kind of have special memories for me, and they're memories of where I read them and with whom and the feeling in the room. And I, you know, if I read a poem to myself at home silently, I don't think I have built up those kind of memories, strong memories for the poem or for when I read it in quite the same way. So there's one poem in the book, Sea Fever by John Masefield. You know, it starts, I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky. And all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by. I feel like it's hard to stop. You want to keep going, but I won't read it all out. But, you know, just those lines, I can see myself sitting in this corridor in a school in Raynes Park in South London on a Friday afternoon, listening to my year six group, taking turns to read the verses and the kind of conversation we had about the sea and adventures and journeys and how the words and the rhythm sort of swept us away. You know, we were, despite being in a noisy corridor, we'd kind of created this little space that was our group. You know, I think the chocolate biscuits probably helped as well, create that kind of relaxed feeling. It wasn't a sort of lesson, but it's sort of an example of how reading aloud and reading together in company creates a kind of web of memories, linking the poem with the place we read it and with the people who shared that experience together. It's not just about the sound that the poem is making. I think it's important. It's sort of the overall feel is really important for my selection, and also variety. You're not just looking for, you know, regular rhyming poems or similar line lengths. But I wanted to really mix things up and have quite a lot of variety in there. Nursery rhymes, sonnets, love poems, Elizabeth Barrett Browning, Christina Rossetti, modern stuff, Maya Angelou with her sort of soaring repetitions in Still I Rise, and kind of nonsense poems like The Ning Nang Nong, Swipe Milligan. So just kind of a real sort of mixture of things to entertain people from ancient to modern across different backgrounds and nationalities. And of course, the other element of the book is its kind of every day of the year aspect. I suppose you might call it like seasonal reading. I was trying to think about this, like how you know you kind of, it's good for the environment if we eat seasonally. I think maybe it's good for us to sort of read seasonally as well. I think for a lot of us, poetry is something that we don't access very often. Maybe it's something you did at school. Maybe it's something that's quite occasional, like for a special event like a wedding or a funeral or, you know, a rite of passage. It's kind of really emotionally charged moments in our lives. But, you know, I'm sure, Katie, you're the same. You know, we should have poetry every day of our lives, shouldn't we? It doesn't take, you know, much time. It's not like reading a massive novel. It's just a few minutes to kind of give you that little moment of wonder or awe in the day.
I loved when you were talking about Sea Fever, and it's so funny that you should choose that one, because that is also a poem for me which holds very strong memories of reading it with a group, but a very different group, a very different situation to the one that you described, Liz, because the group that I was running at the time was in a care home for people living with dementia, And I remember reading those lines, you know, and that first line, "I must go down to the seas again," always really stays with me. And we had had a gentleman coming along to the group for a few sessions, but he hadn't really been that interested, you know, and a few times he'd kind of got up and wandered away, gone to kind of look for other things. And we read this poem and there was a really big change for him in that session. And he just straight away, I remember him kind of sitting up straight and leaning in. And it was like he was just watching and kind of waiting for each new word. And at the end, he stood up and recited that first part of the poem, and he had learned it in school. And it turned out, I didn't know this at the time, but it turned out, you know, that the group was in Liverpool. He had worked on ships and down at the docks in his working life, had so many kind of strong associations with that. And I remember that moment when I kind of hear those words now, yeah, I can sort of almost feel myself back in that room, and sort of like, even to the point where I can remember where I was sitting and where he was sitting and other group members and that kind of thing. And it's really interesting when you go back and read poems again where you've had an experience like that with them, that you, it kind of, all of that is carried with it and kind of added in somehow into the mix. I think that's really, really special. And do you think there's something particularly around the reading aloud of that and the hearing and the rhythm as well that kind of goes along with that, which kind of makes it stay with you in that particular way? I'd love for you to pick a poem from the anthology, maybe one that is particularly meaningful for you or has been particularly powerful when read aloud, to share with us, Liz, if that's okay, if you're happy to do that.
Yeah, thanks, Katie. Yeah, I think, yeah, it was a difficult one to pick, wasn't it, with the 366 to go with. But I thought I'd read Barter, which is by Sarah Teasdale. It's a 2nd of August poem. and it goes like this. "Life has loveliness to sell. All beautiful and splendid things. Blue waves whitened on a cliff. Soaring fire that sways and sings. And children's faces looking up, holding wonder like a cup. Life has loveliness to sell. Music like a curve of gold. Scent of pine trees in the rain. Eyes that love you, arms that hold. And for your spirit's still delight, holy thoughts that star the night. Spend all you have for loveliness. Buy it and never count the cost. For one white singing hour of peace, count many a year of strife well lost. And for a breath of ecstasy, give all you have been or could be."
Lovely. Thank you for reading that one out loud. I love that bit about children's faces looking up, holding wonder like a cup. Just that description of it, and you can kind of really picture what that kind of looks like and the sort of feeling of that again. Not just what it looks like, but the kind of feeling of that wonder, and what it's like when you kind of witness that in a child. It was actually making me think when you were reading it then of at the weekend, my daughter was holding my friend's baby who is 5 weeks old, and she kept saying to me, "Look at her fingernails, Mum. Look how tiny her fingernails." And she kept kind of going back and just stroking this little fingernail, and her face was like that. You know, it was just like, could not get over how amazing it was that these fingernails, which, and she kept saying, "Look at it next to mine. Mine are about 50 times bigger." And she said to me, you know, "Can you believe it?" And I think I just sort of, you know, said something like, "Oh, well, yeah, you know, your fingernails used to be that little when you were a baby," you know, totally really missing the kind of magic and awe of that moment of like, yeah, actually, it is really incredible and amazing. But I don't know, Liz, is there any particular reasons for you for choosing this poem?
Yeah, well, I mean, I also love that line. I was going to mention it too. It just really it really stands out. And also that when I read it with my Zoom group, you know, when I finished reading, I think you did an ah or a mmm,
And that is the kind of response I got when I read it. And I really love that kind of, when you get that sort of immediate feeling from the group, you know, even in a Zoom room, you can kind of sort of recognize it. And it's not like a verbal response that they're giving immediately. It's something emotional. It's like, you know, it comes straight from the heart, I think. And I think a poem that can do that is, you know, a remarkable poem. But then, you know, the poem being called Barter, and the kind of notion of buying loveliness is kind of an interesting one, and something you can really sort of dwell on in the discussion. You know, loveliness is a commodity, you know, it's something of value, and it's for sale. This is kind of quite, you know, I find that really interesting. It's not necessarily something freely given, but something, you know, maybe we have to actively take from life to buy it or to assimilate it. And I think that's all really great stuff for a really good discussion, which is what happened when I read it with my group.
Absolutely. I actually read this poem quite recently with a shared reading group that I run here at Calderstones, which is a group for refugees, asylum seekers and migrants. And in that reading, I was really struck by the final stanza, and in particular kind of wondering about that idea there of spend all you have for loveliness. And I think struck by that in a different way in this group. Many of the people in that group have had to give so much and have been through really terrible experiences in order to get here to this point. And I think I was wondering about the line and never count the cost, and how kind of easy or difficult that might be in practice to do when you have felt that sense of having spent all you have for loveliness, like you were saying, picking up on the idea within the poem. And it was interesting because it felt like, although a poem that felt familiar and I've read lots of times before in different groups, felt like a completely different reading of it this time in terms of the kind of things that were standing out to me even in it as it was read aloud.
It's so fascinating, isn't it, how if you have the privilege of doing the reading the poem with different groups, you can get those different interpretations or different feelings. I think it's one of the real privileges of leading groups, and you as you say, you kind of build up those different reflections and memories as you then move forward. But you never know, in each group, the poem is sort of reinvents itself somehow as well.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I really love about shared reading, because you have that sense that you never have the two readings kind of exactly the same, but you have all of the different responses in the room. So in terms of when we talk about the liveness and, you know, not just coming with kind of preformed opinions, you've got that live response to kind of the different readings that people take from it in the room as well. And you're responding to that as well as to the poem itself.
Yes. And that line, buy it and never count the cost. It's sort of an exhortation almost, isn't it? But is it something that is actually, as you said, really difficult to do?
Absolutely. And that, you know, for one white singing hour of peace, count many a year of strife well lost. I don't know about you, but, you know, many a year of strife, kind of, it sounds a lot to be able to kind of discount that for one white singing hour of peace, the hour versus the many a year. But that's kind of what it's encouraging you to do, isn't it? For a breath of ecstasy, give all you have been or could be. I don't know, Liz, whether there are any other kind of particular poems or authors that you'd like to mention, whether you've got any kind of favourites within the collection, or perhaps any surprising inclusions here that you want to share with us.
Well, actually, in a sense, I wanted to give a shout out to the, you know, to the great classics. Shall I Compare Thee to a Summer's Day, or, you know, Wordsworth's I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud? Because I think sometimes we kind of discount those. They're almost like cliches, and they've become so famous that we might kind of not even be able to read them in a sort of alert way, because they're sort of so familiar. But, you know, I do think they're worth spending time with. And I think reading them aloud is a good way of spending the time. And when I do read those kind of poems in a group, people might, you know, remember the first line or they might have learned it off by heart at school. They're quite often quite surprised when we do it together how much there is in the poem that they hadn't sort of thought about. And as you say, like every group comes up with different interesting things to say. So yeah, so I was keen that, you know, we don't forget the classics and that they continue to get read aloud and enjoyed. And the other thing I wanted to mention was I've included some poems that are kind of from our oral tradition, if you like, which feels very much about orality and listening, that have, you know, poems that maybe have had the spoken word as their origin and only later got written down. So the obvious ones there are nursery rhymes, which there are quite a few of in the book. We often don't know who wrote them. They're kind of mysterious and wonderful and quirky. And we've kind of inherited them from person to person and generation to generation. And, you know, the Oranges and Lemons, Ringy Bells of St. Clemens, you know, that's one of my favourites from when I was a child.
So why do you think reading aloud is important?
There's so much happening in a way when you're speaking out the words from the page. You know, it's like, it's kind of an astonishing journey, isn't it? From written words printed on a page, so you're making them travel from that page, from the silence of the page to sound. And first of all, you speak the words aloud, you breathe them out, as Eliel was saying, and you articulate them with your tongue, your lips, your whole body is involved really in speaking. Speaking those words and you create kind of energy, literally sound waves. I mean, you know, won't go into all the physics of it, but because I don't know it, but the, you know, sound waves, vibrations, you know, it's literally kind of moving through the air and finding its way to your listener and into the minds and hearts of those listeners. So it's kind of a transformative process, I reckon. Transformative, but also there's a kind of partnership that you're setting up with reading aloud somehow, which is a relationship between the poem and the reader. So you've got to, you know, get stuck in, you've got to make that poem alive for the other people in the room and animate it. And you're a bit like we're saying with the nursery rhymes, in a way you're kind of passing on the gift of the poem to your listener. So I feel once you start to think about it, it's very special. You know, sometimes it goes beyond the room as well. So you've got often somebody will say they're going to pass on the poem to a friend or their granddaughter or something. They think, oh yeah, that's that, they'll love this. I mean, that happens quite often, doesn't it? And that also feels really special, that you feel like that reading aloud will sort of move outside the room and the poem kind of takes on another life and further journeys. So yeah, kind of a transmission of what we appreciate or want other people to enjoy. You know, we often want our children or grandchildren to, well, we want to teach them stuff, how to ride a bike or cook a, you know, family recipe or, you know, learn family stories. But poetry, I think, can also be like that kind of thing that you pass on. And the best way of passing it on is to kind of have that moment where you read together. So you don't just say, you know, oh, Tennyson's, Wordsworth's brilliant poet, go read, go enjoy them. You know, you should like this, but actually sharing it together, it really makes that, it makes that movement from page to listener.
We often talk about one of the essentials of shared reading being care about what you read, and we talk a lot about that in terms of choosing what you will read with your group and kind of thinking about what you will read, picking the thing and preparing it ahead of the group. But actually as well, it makes me think about that, you know, the way that we read and that kind of gift of that to the group in sort of presenting that feels really important. Not that it, you know, it's in any way performative or has to be done in a certain way, but just hearing it in that human voice that feels so powerful and of course makes it very different, as you point out, from kind of an ordinary book group where you would read the thing alone and come together to kind of share your opinions about it that have already sort of been formed as you've read it alone. Something about the being together and the reading of the literature in the room, which is all live, and you're responding to it in that moment, in that liveness, feels really key. And I think makes the text feel like another presence in the room as well, and kind of it helps, it makes it provide a language for maybe thoughts and feelings that we might have had, but maybe haven't been able to express before or in that particular way. Of course, we talked earlier about how everybody reads differently, and kind of hearing it read in different voices as well can help you pick up on different things within the poem that you might not have noticed in your own voice. I've often noticed, don't know if you've seen this happening, Liz, as well, when I've started to read aloud in a group, and particularly I think where I've been delivering a group, maybe in a place where there's a lot of noise. Often I seem to have been delivering shared reading groups in places where there is a lot of noise and busyness going on. And you can sort of feel a moment when you start reading aloud. To begin with, sometimes it can feel a bit jarring kind of as you first go in, and then you sort of feel almost a moment where it suddenly feels like the group members are really sort of settling into it and relaxing into the poem, and there's a shift in the room and a change, and it does feel like there's almost a kind of magic in that, in terms of being able to sort of tune into something different in a way that if you just gave it to everybody on the page and said read that and concentrate really hard on it would not have the same effect. And I love that idea that I think often people comment on the pace and say, oh, when you first started reading that, I didn't think I was going to be able to listen because it was a lot slower than I would be used to, or that I would read myself. But I really got into it as it went through and just kind of got used to the pace. Naturally, it helped me to be able to kind of notice things in it that I wouldn't have if I'd been going quite so quickly.
I think that also is about, like what you mentioned earlier, Katie, about the silence and the pauses. I think that's that helps, and that's what you're doing in a way by slowing down. You're kind of creating more space, aren't you, between lines and words, and that kind of helps.
There was one particular poem actually that really stood out for me that I thought I might share with you. It was hard really to choose just one, my copy of the book is already covered with post-it notes, as I've shown you, Liz, marking out lots of different poems. But the poem for the 7th of July is The Lake Isle of Innisfree. And I'll just read this through to you. I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always, night and day, I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore, while I stand on the roadway or on the pavement's grey. I hear it in the deep heart's core.
Oh, that was lovely.
Absolutely love that poem. And as we were saying earlier, you often associate particular poems with memories of times that you have read them with groups. And although this is a poem I've read lots of times over the years with lots of different groups, the memory that comes back to me when I read it was one particular time where I was reading it, and it was at the care home for people living with dementia. And I remember that particular day I had arrived to complete chaos and couldn't quite work out what was going on, and then realised that the main lounge was being redecorated, which might not sound like much of an event, but for the 30 or so residents who spend the best part of their days in that lounge, I think the disruption to routine, the unfamiliar surroundings that they'd been moved into was hugely distressing. And I remember being met at the door with cries of, you know, I want to go home, and people saying, you know, have you come to take me home now? And I remember really feeling horribly inadequate and kind of having to admit that I had come to read poems and really wondering what possible comfort that could bring just at that moment. And we read this poem, and I remember one lady in the group was very struck by those lines, I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow. And she kept returning to those lines and sort of tracing them with her finger on the page. And we reread them. And I remember she said, that is right. It does drop. And she was kind of making this sort of dropping motion with her hand. And I remember sort of thinking in the midst of the chaos, I remember we were in a little room, but it was very noisy even outside the room on the corridor. Just thinking that kind of desire to kind of arise and go now and live alone in the Be Loud Glade must have felt very real that day for people. And also, I think I just love the urgency of that. I will arise and go now, that kind of gets repeated. And it feels to me quite like a decision that's sort of come about after a long time of maybe uncertainty or feeling a bit unsure. For always, night and day, I hear lake water lapping.
Yes, there's a sort of a sense of, for me anyway, that I will arise and go now, sort of almost like, you know, you need to get the willpower to do that. You need to get, you know, sometimes you have to sort of force yourself perhaps to get out of the other moment and to get back into this moment of peace. It's a sort of mental change that you have to make, or emotional change. Yes, and you know, back to the discussion we had at the start about sounds and silence in poetry, you know, the lapping with the low sounds by the shore, I mean, you just can, it's amazing how those words evoke that lapping and the peace that those sounds make you feel, which is lovely. Yeah, of course the deep heart's core is wonderful, isn't it?
Oh, yes, I love that bit as well. Absolutely. And that, you know, to me always feels like a really good description of where shared reading kind of helps us get to sort of beneath layers to the real centre. And I do think the reading aloud and the rereading really helps with that. You know, it's sort of like doesn't accept the kind of surface level or first attempt, encourage you to push on and keep trying for that kind of true feeling, the deep heart's call. I remember asking one of the group members at the end as well if she liked the poem, and she said, you know, yes, I thought it was lovely. It was about peace. And I asked her what she would want to take with her if she was going to a place like the one in the poem. And she actually responded, and she said, and this is a direct quote because I found the account from when we had the group and went back and found it. And she said, well, I would take a book of poems to read. That would keep me happy. And if I could manage it, I would take a record player and a tape of poems being read by their authors. So I thought that was amazing when I went back to it and saw what she'd said there for this discussion about reading aloud and the importance of that, and hearing, being able to hear the poems read aloud, and that kind of response to that poem there. I thought that was great.
That's brilliant, Katie. What a lovely quote. Yes, fabulous.
Following on from that, do you think that reading aloud can change our mood, make us feel better, or perhaps make us feel something new?
Well, I mean, what you've just said, Katie, that description of that group is just, you know, that's evidence enough, isn't it, to show that it can change our mood or have a calming effect or an uplifting effect. I remember when I was running a group in a sheltered housing, in a lounge in a sheltered housing centre, and it was the first time there, and there was somebody in the group who seemed a bit uninterested actually, and her eyes started to close, and I think she nodded off, and I was thinking, okay, these things can happen. I'm not going to take it personally. I'm just going to carry on reading to her as if she, you know, she's as if she's awake and listening. But you know, I couldn't help feeling, oh, you know, could I have done something different to keep her engaged? But I had the luck that the following day, her key worker emailed me and said that she wants to pass on a message to me, which was that she'd loved the poetry. And the best way for her to listen was to listen with her eyes closed. And in fact, she'd asked for a notebook so she could copy out the poem for herself. And it was, you know, don't normally get that kind of feedback. I might have just thought she had slept all the way through. But it was just, I think it was a really important lesson for me that it's not always possible to know what's going on in the group and how people are listening, or if they're listening at all. And you can't really make any assumptions about it. There's a slight mystery to it, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I often think, you know, something about that kind of shared point of focus as well. In many of the places that I go to read, you know, there are often kind of people around, and in a group, just thinking of the care home group, there are often people sat around in a lounge together, often in a circle or a semicircle. But the shift that it made, having this poem read aloud and sort of drawing everyone together, and the connection that came about as a result of that wasn't there beforehand, feels like a massive shift and a massive change. And I've seen that lots of times in lots of different places, actually. And I think as well, in terms of, you know, people often talk about it's really kind of given me confidence, or helped me grow in confidence coming to the shared reading groups. And maybe that isn't always an instant change in the way that we think of mood, you know, a shift in someone's mood. It feels like it can be quite an instant thing, but confidence feels like maybe that takes longer and is a more gradual thing. And often find kind of people might be a bit embarrassed or shy to read aloud initially, but we're not talking about an act lead performance here, are we? Delivery doesn't matter, does it?
No, I don't think so. It's very much moving away from that feeling of, you know, being, you know, in the classroom and being told you've got to read from your book or whatever in front of everyone. It's I think we have to kind of overcome some of those experiences that people have had, also about poetry as well. Oh yeah, don't like poetry is such a, you know, it's very easy to overcome it quite quickly, isn't it? Just having a shared reading experience, and then you kind of never look back. But I mean I personally get so much pleasure from listening to readers in my groups. Like you say, if somebody's been a little bit underconfident and then reads a line or a verse, but they just bring, everyone brings their own individuality to their reading. I actually often find it incredibly emotional to hear all these different individuals, different personalities, different accents, different ages, and they're all reading the same, especially when you do rereading it as well, these words of poets from, you know, years past, or just, you know, poets that are not with us, but we're somehow engaging with them in the room. And I think it's about variation in voice, in the human voice that comes across. And that's what I find, you know, a massive privilege to hear. So there's not kind of, you're not looking for, you know, a great performance, or the, you know, the best reader, or, you know, the best way of reading a particular line.
I've got one final question for you, Liz, which is really, how are you envisaging the anthology being used? What are your hopes for this book?
Well, in my imagination, I'd love to think of it, you know, in someone's home, not on the bookshelf, but actually, you know, on the kitchen table, or in reach of the armchair or sofa, and, you know, people picking it up together at the end of the day, and sharing a short moment over a poem, you know, maybe with a cup of tea or glass of wine, but just to kind of, yeah, I have a sort of very cozy vision of how it might be used. That would be my ideal. I think the idea of, yeah, this sort of coziness and to go back to that little Doric quote, you know, that sense of the human voice and finding a connection between people over poetry.
Fantastic. That sounds absolutely brilliant. Liz, thank you so much for talking to me today, and a huge thank you to you and to Batsford Books for allowing us to include a letter to readers from the reader. It has been wonderful to have you as a guest. And just a reminder that A Poem to Read Aloud Every Day of the Year is available from the 14th of September, and copies will be available from the Reader Bookshop. Liz, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Katie.
Hello, I'm Maxine Peake, and I'm a patron of The Reader, which is a national charity on a mission to bring about a reading revolution, using the power of literature and reading aloud to transform lives. Our volunteers around the country bring people together in small groups to read great stories and poems and create powerful moments of connection. We call this shared reading. In a world that feels increasingly divided and with increased pressures on our mental health, shared reading offers time and space to share what matters, improving well-being and reducing loneliness. If you want to support The Reader's vital work, visit www.thereader.org.uk to donate or get involved. Thank you.
You can find links in the description of this episode to Liz Eisen's anthology on bookshop.org. And as Katie mentioned, at the end of the book, you'll find a letter to readers with information about the reader and our work. We're grateful to Liz and to Batsford Books for including that letter. Also in the description, you'll find links to three more anthologies, edited by Angela McMillan for The Reader and published by Penguin Random House. Those are A Little Aloud, A Little Aloud for Children, and A Little Aloud with Love. These are rich collections of poems and stories and extracts that have been read in shared reading groups over the years. That's it for this episode of The Reader Podcast. Many thanks to Liz and to Katie for recording their conversation. Thanks to our patron Maxine Peake for that message you heard a few moments ago. You'll find the link to our website in the episode description too. Thanks to Chris Lynn for sound editing and production of this episode, and thanks to Chris and to Frank Johnson for all the music featured, which was written and performed by them especially for the Reader Podcast. Lastly, thanks to our core funders, Arts Council England, and the players of the People's Postcode Lottery. I hope you enjoyed listening. If so, please let us know by leaving a review. And until next time, goodbye.